I know what I'm good at, and I'm, you know, and this is as arrogant as I get right here. I'm going to say I am very good at playing like assholes because they're likable. Because I don't have, that's the one, my one superpower on screen. I am not necessarily likable in real life. I'm on screen, I am likable. I don't know why. I don't give a shit. It just happens. And so, great, let it ride. You know, my manager used to say it, like, oh, everybody say it, like, yeah, you're a lovable asshole.
Yeah.
And I will play shades of that character until the day I die.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hollis, and this is my podcast. I spend so many hours of every single week reading and listening to podcasts and watching YouTube videos and trying to find out as much as I can about the world around me. And that's what we do on this show. We talk about everything, life and how to be an entrepreneur. What happened to dinosaurs? What's the best recipe for fried chicken? What's the best plan for intermittent fasting? What's going on with our inner child? How's therapy working out for you? Whatever it is my guests are into, I want to unpack it so that we can all understand. These are conversations. This is information for the curious. This is the Rachel Hollis Podcast. How did you get into doing what you do?
It's funny. There's a lot of different answers to that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a step-by-step one, which is probably pretty boring. It's just about finding it. Well, okay, here's, you know how I got into it? At the very beginning was in high school, I did a couple plays. After the upperclassmen had graduated from the theater area there, because we didn't get along.
Right. Was there like a guy or a girl who got every major role in every production? Because that happened in my high school.
Well, that was me when I got in there.
Okay.
Does that sound too? There was a dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Cordry. and that meant two plays, by the way. Because I was a senior.
Right.
Those guys are gone. And to tell you the truth, before that, I don't really recall. I probably, because I was just so judgy of them. Like, God, I hate that guy. He can't act. What is he doing up there? I could
what
do this
his
better.
Name? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Me too.
I'm not gonna say it.
I know. The girl that got every role has a very unique name, so I can't. I want to, though.
I know. Oh, my God. So unique. We'll tell each other after.
Got every role, every part, and she had the voice of a songbird, so I get it.
Yeah,
but I hated her. What a name.
Yeah.
Where's Bill these days? Handsome dude,
very good, could sing, and we almost got into a fist fight when I was a junior.
Over what?
A girl.
Okay.
I mean, I'm from Boston. Like, fist fights happen.
Right.
Just
with your mom.
That's what you do at recess.
Right, of course. Basically. Okay, great.
With your mom. Yeah. fist fights are just a pastime.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did it. And then in college, I was more focused on writing. I always wanted to be a writer. And I had a roommate my sophomore year named Cutter. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Cutter,
last name or just like a moniker?
That was
given.
His first name.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah. Cutter. I believe it was a nickname, but his first name, real first name was Dead.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Right.
He was Cutter.
Right.
And, God bless him for it. He's a great guy. We're still in touch now. He's a very funny dude. And he said to me, like, the first week I met him, he was like, you should do a play. And I was one of those guys that was always like, you know, watching movies or watching TV and going, I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I could totally do that. Right? Can I do
that?
I think I can do that. It's just saying lines believably, you know,
anyone
really
could try.
At the core of it.
Yeah.
Whatever your process is or, But so and he signed me up for an audition, both of us, for an audition in sophomore year of Torch Song Trilogy. And we both got it.
Oh, cool.
And we were outsiders to the theater world at UMass. And we were frat boys at the time.
Oh, wow.
I had that, phase. I went through a little frat boy phase. And we got it. And we were just like, people were like, who are these two? And it was great. And then I was hooked. I added theater as a double major to English.
Cool.
And, and then the second worthwhile instance was my acting teacher, my guru, like everybody's got a guru. And this was in college, Ed Golden. We had an outgoing conference. He talked to all his students and talked about plans and about their, how they did in the class and what he thought. And he was tough. He was really tough. And he said, this is the conference. And I'm doing a perfect Ed Golden impersonation, okay, by the way. Rob, do you think you want to do this as a job? And I went, I think maybe. And he goes, yeah, you could. And then it was like I was given permission,
right,
in a way,
Right.
And so I was like, oh, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
When we get that validation from someone, that sort of authority figure,
absolutely,
who could have zero actual influence in ways that matter, but it's like all we need, we're like, okay,
I don't know what he did before he got to be a professor. He could have been a crackhead, like, so he could have been some con man.
But it worked.
But he fooled me.
Yeah. Did you go to New York or LA?
I went the day after graduation. I moved to New York with a couple of friends.
And was the intention to do comedy? Was it to do theater?
No, it was to do theater.
Okay.
I fancied myself a pretty important artist at the time.
Yeah.
I basically only did Shakespeare my first year or two in New York City.
Wow.
Yeah. I love Shakespeare. Mm. It's one of my life's great loves. And
do you still do it?
I just pick it up and I start reading out loud and
yes,
my kids are like, ugh.
Oh, please.
And my wife says she likes it, but I don't know. And
because
it's very funny.
Yeah.
Shakespeare.
Oh my God. Shakespeare's amazing.
And I would always play the jackasses,
yeah,
the mechanicals, yeah, for the most part. And so then,
what's your favorite comedy?
My favorite, Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's
the best. I just heard 2 days ago that they're remaking the movie. Have you heard this?
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you remember when they did it in the 90s and it was like Denzel and Keanu.
It was so good.
The cast of that movie is insane.
It was
so
good.
It's so well done.
Kenneth Branagh.
Oh, I love him.
I'm getting chills right now. Look at this. Look what's happening in my arm.
So well done.
Yeah.
And Emma Thompson.
And Emma Thompson.
Come on.
They're incredible together. Yeah. They're perfect.
Yeah, they really are. I'm still upset about that.
And then there was a Much Ado About Nothing. I remember Clark Gregg was in it. It was another movie. It was black and white indie film.
Oh, cool.
And it was like modern day. It was set in modern day at a party. And
I think this one's supposed to be, it's like trying to do potentially what A Clueless did, or where we're sort of reinventing. And this could all be a lie. This was just something I heard in a meeting the other day that Glenn Powell.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I was like, oh, well, that's the only.
Neat.
I know. Well, we'll see.
I'm excited. I'll go see any. I just watched my youngest daughter is a big Shakespeare fan now as well. And, we love Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
We just watched the Leonardo DiCaprio version together, which is
beautiful,
insane and
gutting.
Incredibly violent.
Right.
And,
right.
And it really perfectly, it's what Shakespeare intended, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And I love that she loved it as much as
How old
I
is
do.
She?
She's 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many kids do you have?
I have two.
Two. And the oldest?
The oldest is 16.
16. Okay. I've got 16, 14, 10, and 6.
Six. All right, wait.
That's
16. Go do it again.
16.
Yeah.
14.
Oh, go ahead.
10 and six.
Far out.
I know. What was
you're
I
in
thinking?
The shit.
I'm
man.
In the shit still. Yeah. You're at least I'm out of sort of toddler age, but it's still pretty. It's a punch in the head.
Yeah. You know what I love about having kids, and you especially probably can appreciate this, having kids, four kids at those ages, are those corners that you turn, you know, like,
and you're like, okay.
Like when my oldest was a baby, they stopped screaming every time I put them in the car.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
And I looked back and they were just happy.
Right.
And I was like, oh, life has changed.
Yes.
Life is different now.
Well, does your 16-year-old drive yet?
Yeah.
Game changer.
Yeah.
Game changer.
Oh, yeah, because my wife's away right now.
Yeah.
I'm working.
Right.
I'm so busy right now. And if it weren't for them, our life would fall apart.
Seriously.
I would be failing.
No, it was for months and months and months because I have my oldest does a ton of theater at school. Mm-hmm. And his younger brother plays all the sports. So for like a year, I was like, we're so close. We're so close to me having another person who can drive the athlete to and from stuff. And it's such a game changer.
It's everything.
Yeah.
It's everything. I do miss driving them to like karate.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
That was my job and I loved it.
Yeah.
And we had such great talks.
You do. That is something to be said for the trips in the car.
We really got into everything. And they're non-binary. Mm-hmm. And so they're very... they want to answer everything. So any question I would have about identity or anything, it's just queer life in general and what as a, you know, straight white male, what am I supposed to do here?
Right.
And they'd have the answer like that.
Yeah.
And I would, I really treasure that and appreciate it. I miss that.
Yeah.
I do miss
it. This next generation, in some ways, I was just talking to someone about this. They have asked such bigger questions of themselves so much earlier in life than we even knew that we were capable of asking.
I was just having this thought on the way over here.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many different, who knew there were ways that we could explore our identity at all,
right?
Besides being like everybody else,
right?
And you know, which I was obsessed with.
It's so interesting to me. My oldest son is queer as well, mm-hmm. and he, in a very similar way, just came to have such confidence in himself so young, mm-hmm. like. Just was himself. And for the last 5 years, so pretty formative years, if he's 16, for the last 5 years, we've lived in the country outside of Austin. And Texas countryside is not an easy place to be a gay young man who wears nail polish and has his ears pierced and does theater and all of those things.
Oh.
And he's just never shied away from being himself.
God, how was that really hard though for him?
I worried about it a lot. And when I would hear things after the fact of like the names he would be called or the things, I'm like, I'll burn it down. Like, tell me where they live.
Tell me who.
They'll die tonight.
Yes. I
feel like,
the
Mom,
same way.
It's okay.
And they don't, but I don't know how your child feels, but mine is, they're like, almost like laughing.
Right.
When they tell the story, it's like they're laughing at that person.
Right. Like how sad.
Like,
yeah. Like,
God,
oh,
can you
yeah.
believe
yeah.
that this happened to me?
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right, a real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. One of my favorite nuts, yeah, I have one, is pistachios.
period, all the time. I eat them constantly on salads by the handful. I literally have a glass jar of pistachios in my kitchen at all times. And whether you're a pistachio purist who loves the experience of cracking them open, not me, or you love the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios is the perfect snack. There's a bunch of tasty flavors to choose from, though I personally just like it plain and simple with a little bit of salt. Wonderful Pistachios is one of the highest protein nuts. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Visit wonderfulpistachios.com. Well, it's also so wild, I think, from an outsider looking in, of how much people are obsessed with not wanting, especially that generation, to be able to identify themselves, or being, or maybe feeling so confused about it, or why do you give us your pronouns, or why do you want the, or why do you not want to be referred to by that name anymore? And I get questions a lot from parents who are grappling with, you know, this is my child is trans, or my child is this, or my child, and I don't know, what am I supposed to do? Right? They want to be supportive, but they're also fearful. So what was that?
Yeah.
Was there anything in your process? Because you were learning about it in real time. Any parent who has a child go through this and you haven't gone through it before, you're learning in real time. So were the things that helped that?
It's good that they're asking.
Yeah.
You know, it's good that they're exploring. I would tell them to ask their kids.
Yeah.
Too, because they are a font of information. Right. And language evolves and the culture evolves, and I have no problem with that. Like the they, them.
Like, why do you care?
I did not care from day one. Neither did my wife. Like, hey, man, you just let your freak flag fly.
Yeah, just be you.
And that problem I had was with the name change. They changed their name. And it was a name that I loved and I had given them.
Yeah.
And that was an issue for me. So I had to.
I could feel that.
I really had to sit down and figure out, you know, why is that so important? Because you gave it to them, but you really found it in a book.
Right.
Like, is it, it's not your grandmother's name.
Right.
Like, why is it that important? And let's think about this new name. Their new name is Indrid.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah. And so I looked it up because I'd never heard of it before.
Yeah.
And it's very uncommon, very rare. There's actually a, what do they call those things? Those like Bigfoot and the Mothman.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, what do they call? There's a name for them. I forget what. But they're obsessed with the Mothman. And the Mothman has this like, there's another one of those guys in that same town called the Smiling Man. And his name is Indrid Cold.
Oh, wow.
And I believe he sometimes appears as a woman, sometimes as a man. They don't know. He's not as well thought out as like a Bigfoot.
Right.
But it's interesting. And I also saw that it had like Celtic origins,
cool.
Indrid. And it was not gender specific. And as I was sort of researching it and exploring my problems with it, I came to love it. And what they refer to now as their dead name is, for all intents and purposes, dead.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, who cares? The great thing about this is, like, this doesn't mean that, like, they can do, who knows what the next step is.
Well, isn't it wild, too, that, like, we should be allowed to name ourselves.
Right.
It is very interesting that we have never really considered self-identifying, that we get to decide. I so admire the next generation because they're like, I get to decide.
Yeah.
I get to decide who I am, how I dress, what my gender is, if I have one, who I love, how, in a way, I think that people push back on it because deep in your core of cores, you're jealous that you didn't have the same freedom.
And I personally, I'm frustrated that I wouldn't know where to begin today.
Right.
Like, am I this?
Yeah.
Am I me? Am I, where would I even begin to explore my re-explore my identity.
Yeah.
Like it's so great that they're really getting such a jump on it, I guess.
Yeah.
Is the best way to say it.
Well, I wonder too with you, I'm curious, yeah, because your identity shifted as an actor.
Mm.
If you started with theater, yeah, and Shakespeare and this deeper,
okay,
work,
okay,
you're in iambic pentameter, you're in that world, and now you're very well known as a really specific comedian. And like when Jack and I found out, we were like, yes, we could think of a this is so dumb. And I know that you've done more important things and whatever, but I rewatched Hot Tub Time Machine recently, and I was crying on an airplane.
Yeah.
It's still, I know you've done other things and I could name them for you.
No, it's my
it's
favorite thing I've
so
ever done.
It's so fucking funny. Like, you know when you rewatch a comedy, you're like, I don't know if this is going to work still.
You're right.
God, it works still.
Well, it works, but it's like, there's it's problematic at
times. It's 100% problematic. You have to release a lot of things.
And you know, my kids, my youngest especially really wants to see it.
Like,
and we have spent their whole lives going, we might get to a point where you can watch anything before you turn 18.
Right.
We have gotten to that point. Thank you, pandemic. But Hot Tub is off the table.
Yes.
Even when you are an adult,
right,
but on your own, you are not allowed.
So this is interesting.
But now we're talking about watching.
Right. Like, how do you hold space for that? Of like, this was so long ago and we know better now and we do better now because we've learned, like, well, that was, these things were inappropriate. But how do you hold space for that as a creator?
What do you mean hold space?
Like, that you have created something or you've been part of creating something that you now would look at and go, oh, that was kind of a bummer.
Done it so many times.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
there's been so many. I mean, you know, I came up doing improv after my Shakespeare stint. I did improv at the UCB theater. And I mean, 90% of the garbage we improvised was, in today's opinion, like just completely offensive.
Yeah.
But I don't like, I'm not afraid I'm going to get canceled for all that shit.
Right,
you
right.
know, I'm, because I guess I kind of firmly believe what you just said.
Yeah.
Like that's a time.
It's, yeah.
It's a museum piece in a sense.
A
like, you know,
it's a museum piece.
It's a Hot Tub Time Machine is a museum piece.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It's so ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous. Everything about it, like, do you know the Inception story? Like, how on earth did they? How did that?
Oh, absolutely.
What was
so? The guys.
My favorite thing we've talked about so far.
I will say it this way: Josh Heald and a couple friends of his in college, who are also screenwriters, who directed me in a movie they wrote, Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay, another one that you can look back on with a raised eyebrow.
Museum piece.
Yeah. You know, they joked about, they always wanted to be screenwriters, and they joked about Hot Tub Time Machine. They were going to write a movie called, they were going to pitch, I think it was probably only pitch a movie named Hot Tub Time Machine. Like, and they would joke about it when they were high.
Yeah.
And then it was one of those things, I think, or it may have just been like, hey, here's an idea.
Yeah. Someone's like, you got anything else?
Yeah.
Like, well,
it may have been one of those, have you got anything else things? But it was probably like, he probably mentioned it and someone was like, you got to come in and pitch that because that is awesome.
Yeah.
And it is awesome. Like, when I got that script, I was doing a sort of comedy drama with Sam Rockwell. And I got the script. It's back when we still got scripts, like bound scripts, and the binder said Hot Tub Time Machine, and I was like, oh my god, what is happening to my career? And I showed Sam Rockwell, I was like, I found our new piece, and he just laughed. And then I opened up the first page of the title page, it says Hot Tub Time Machine based on the incredibly true story, and I was like, oh, I'm in. Oh, this dude's amazing. I'm in.
God, it's so funny.
Yeah, and then, you know, Cusack had a lot to do with sort of the anarchic. Is that how you say that? Anarchic? Anarchy? Anarchic? If something pertains to anarchy, is it anarchic?
Sure.
Sure. Let's say anarchic. Yeah. Is largely due to him because we improvised a lot. And he would come up with shit that I was like, there is no way that's going to make it in the movie. And here we are spending 2 hours on this bit. And God damn if it's not in the movie. And it's perfect. You know, it's just this weirdness that has nothing. It's not driving the story whatsoever. And, you know,
was it fun to make?
It's the best time I've ever had. Those guys are my brothers.
Yeah.
They always will be.
I have a friend who has a vacation house. Whenever she's not staying there on vacation, which is pretty often because she's a mama with kids who works in a totally different city, she rents that house out on Airbnb. And she has absolutely loved the process. It's a way for her family to thrive, both by having a place to go to and by getting additional income. And it's been super easy for her to manage because she does everything online. While you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle, and it's a great way to earn some extra money, just like my friend. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Guys, no two listeners of the show are exactly alike, which means that no two vacations you take are going to be exactly alike either. And if you're looking for a place that will serve all of you, Texas has a vast landscape of cultures, regions, destinations, and activities that allow for an infinite number of different travel experiences. I love Texas so much, I moved my family there for 5 years. Because here's the deal, Texas has it all. Are you a beach person? We got you. If you love a rugged vacation, not my jam, but there's plenty of campgrounds, hiking trails, and state parks galore. My favorite part about Texas? The food. It is the thing I miss the absolute most. Whether you love barbecue or Tex-Mex or just want to be in cities that take their food very seriously, you can enjoy live music, visit internationally recognized art museums, and check out thrilling cowboy experiences. Visit traveltexas.com/get-your-own to get the only trip to Texas that matters, yours. That's traveltexas.com/get-your-own. I have recently ordered plants online. I feel like we're living in 2054. It's so exciting. I ordered from Fast Growing Trees. No joke. I got a lemon tree and a snake plant. They delivered to my house. It was so exciting. And now both of them are planted. The snake plant is in my entryway, doing its thing, filtering the air. The lemon tree is in a pot in the backyard. I'm very excited to see what happens. Whatever you're interested in, Fast Growing Trees has it for you. And that includes organic, which I really care about, things that are sourced in the right way. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days, along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee. They offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners of my show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code RACH at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code RACH at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code RACH. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Okay, true story, real confession. One of my favorite things in life is researching and trying out new healthy snacks.
I literally spent like an hour and a half last week researching soybeans. It's real. But what I love is a place like Thrive Market, where I can look for snacks. I can also look for pantry essentials and things to go in my fridge. And I can trust that whatever is on their website is going to be good for me, sourced from great places, have real ingredients, organic, non-GMO. It's like shopping with a friend who's already curated things I want to eat. So one of my favorite discoveries in the last couple of years is Hue chocolate. Have you guys had this yet? It's so good. It's like that square of dark chocolate that I have every single night with my tea makes me so happy. One of the cool things about Thrive is that they have these filters on the website too. So if you have a certain way of eating or dietary restrictions, you can filter the site so it only shows you products within that category. You should totally check it out if you haven't already. You can save time and money and shop Thrive Market today. Go to thrivemarket.com/rach for 30% off your first order. 30% off, plus a free $60 gift. That's thrivemarket.com/rach. 30% off, plus a free $60 gift, thrivemarket.com/rach. Try the Hue.
Were you guys actually like at a ski resort?
We were at a really crappy ski resort in Regina, Canada.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, great. Did you get
for
to
like
ski?
2 weeks?
Okay.
For 2 weeks.
What, did you actually?
Yeah, I could already ski.
Okay.
Craig and Clark couldn't. Cusack was a great skier. I could fake it.
Yeah.
So I get to skip a lot of I just had to show them that I could go down the hill.
Nice.
And so while Clark and Craig were just learning how to ski, I was in bed.
Okay, great.
Which is great. But we shot nights for the most part there, which is crazy.
Wow.
That's always a crazy thing.
Yeah.
And then we went to Vancouver and shot the rest in Vancouver. And it was so much fun. We had such a good time.
You can tell. That's coming.
We had like a 70s good time. Like, you know what I mean?
How essential is it for you? Maybe it's not. But how essential is it for you that like set is a good hang? Like, do you consciously think, if I do that movie, I get to hang? I know those few people. It's going to be a good hang.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think it's essential. I think it's like everything to me. I've always said that just that the secret to being happy and productive in this business is to surround yourself with people you love who are smarter than you.
Yeah.
It's not always up to you. That's the problem. And so I think having come up through the theater, it is important to me. Yeah. And, or at least it affects my experience when it's just a work a day, because it is just work.
Yeah.
When it's just work and I get along with these people, but we're not bonding in that way you bond when you're doing a show, it doesn't affect my performance, but it affects my spirit.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
What does it look like these days? Are there projects that you're working on where you're like, oh, this team is amazing, or you're actively seeking out stuff, you're developing your own, like,
yeah,
what's
I'm
that
doing all of it. Mostly, I've spent a lot of time this last couple months guest starring and stuff that I've loved, and I just finished this 3-episode arc on a show that hasn't come out yet for HBO called How to Be a Bookie. I don't know if I should, am I allowed to say that, but don't edit it out.
Okay.
You can sue me.
I'm in
HBO.
It. He's in it. He's in it.
And it's great. You know, I was scared going into it. I'm always scared.
Are you really?
Well, because for actors, it's always your first day, it seems.
Mm.
Like, you know, because our first day happens and then we all bond and then it's over. And then you go to the next thing and it's your first day again. Like, people usually only have... the first days at work are hard.
Yeah.
And people only have those, you know, maybe a couple times in their life. We have it all the time.
That's it. I've never thought of that before.
Yeah.
And
so first days really get to me. And my wife tells me, you know, it's going to be great. And I'm like, I know it's going to be great. It's still nerve-wracking.
Right.
And I start a show tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Okay.
A pilot that I'm doing for CBS that I wasn't able to make the table read of. I was in Boston and then I was shooting this last show, and that really bums me out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because everybody else has at least met each other.
Right.
And
do you get nervous like the first time that you have to do a take? Are you like, oh God, how's this going to come out? Or you're like, I'm a pro, I got it.
It's a lot easier than it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. No, you know what? It's a better way to say it is that I'm more relieved once enough takes have been, we've done enough takes so that I know that we have it.
Yeah.
And then I can just like, then I really relax.
Right.
And then we probably get it.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
Because I'm trying, always trying to like relax on camera.
Yeah.
Bill Murray has this famous quote, went viral about, they were like, how do you act? What's the secret? And he goes, relax your mouth. And it's so hard.
Yeah.
And I notice when I'm acting, like my, I'm clenching my jaw.
Yeah.
I'm biting.
Yeah.
I'm.
Well, you're also then less present in that moment. I think I find myself doing this when I'm sitting with someone. Like I did this earlier with you because I'm excited that you're here. And then I'll have to consciously like relax the muscles in your body.
Oh.
He's not going anywhere. You're going to chat. It's going to be great.
I wish I had the foresight to do that. I don't. Yeah. I you know, it's almost like I forget.
Yeah, because I feel like if I start to, if I'm feeling it physiologically, I'm going to start to pull it into my thought process.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to start to go, okay, I have a question prepared.
Absolutely.
And I hate that.
That is everything.
Yeah. Just
it's
like be here.
Everything. Like it affects everything. It's just like, you know, a lot of people like method actors or people related to method actors start from the inside.
Mm. And remind me what method acting is.
I don't know. I really don't.
Because there's one where it's like.
Well, that's like you're always the character.
Right. Okay.
This is
Daniel Day-Lewis.
That's the extreme, very rare version.
Got it.
Everybody talks about, but it's not real. I've never seen it on a movie.
I heard someone say recently that it's like, is it acting or is that sort of psychosis? Like,
well,
is it?
My acting teacher, my guru that I talked about earlier said that like, it's not about getting into the role. It's about getting out when the take is over or when the play's down. That's if you can't do that, if you have to, I was in Cat in a Hot Tin Roof.
Oh, I love that.
And
movie.
I played Brick and he has a broken leg.
Yeah.
He's an alcoholic. He has a broken leg throughout the whole play. And I got a real cast. I went to UMass Health Services and got a real cast. I somehow convinced them to put a real cast
for
on
how
me.
Long?
And they were like, all right. about a couple weeks.
Wow.
And my acting teacher looked at me and was like, is that fake? And I went, no, that's real. Thinking how proud I am about it. Like I'm the real deal.
Yeah.
And he went, try acting. Like, oh God, he's right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It was stupid.
Yeah.
I never did that
again. You don't know. You're trying in the beginning when we're doing anything, we're just trying shit. We're like throwing it at the wall. What works for us? What doesn't? How has it shifted and changed? I think of someone like you where you have a really known personality on screen. Does that ever feel like, do you ever feel boxed in?
I don't because I know what I'm good at and I'm, you know, and this is as arrogant as I get right here. I'm going to say I am very good at playing like assholes because they're likable. Because I don't have, that's the one, my one superpower on screen. I'm not necessarily likable in real life. I'm on screen. I am likable. I don't know why. I don't give a shit. It just happens. And so great. Let it ride. You know, my manager used to say it like, everybody say it like, yeah, you're a lovable asshole.
Yeah.
And I will play shades of that character until the day I die.
Yeah.
That said, I'm finding I'm getting cast in a lot of, you know, the older I get, it's really kind of opened up these doors. you know, men have it so easy in terms of, right. of that, that, right. you know, aging is very different for men. And, you know, doors sort of open to us, I think.
Yeah, that's
where,
interesting.
Yeah, like I'm in dramas. I'm getting cast in dramas. I'm playing roles of like really serious, grave people.
Yeah.
And you know, everyone that casts me think they're doing it for the first time. It's very funny. Yeah. They're like, oh, wow, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, it's okay. Yeah, but, yeah. you know,
I
don't care. Basically, I'll do anything if it's good.
Yeah.
And like I said before, if the people mean something to me, hopefully I have that choice and I love them.
How long have you been supporting yourself as an actor?
Oh, that's a good question. Okay. 1998? That's when I got into the UCB. So I would say about 2000, the year 2000 about. Mm. I did, you know, started doing commercials, and then I had part-time jobs. They were able to fall away. My temp agency, I wouldn't call them as much anymore because, you know, I was able to live off that. And then when I met my wife,
Is she in the business?
No, she's not. Okay. No, not at all. She's a speech pathologist. We met in New York, and she said, on our first day we met, we actually have a picture of it in our house. It's wonderful. First day we met, we just immediately were like, you.
Uh-huh.
And she said, so what do you do for a living? And I said, I'm an actor. And she goes, no, I know. I've seen you in the UCB. What do you do for a living?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm an actor. And she went, no. Maybe you're not. How do you get
money?
How do you live? Yeah. Yeah, basically that's what she was saying. She didn't say that explicitly.
Right.
And I was like, I was kind of playing it like coy.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm an actor. And she's like, okay. And then she says to this day, when she tells the story, she let it go because she didn't want to offend me. She felt like I was getting offended.
Right.
This was a sore spot.
Yes.
And I didn't want to say, well, I'm a temp.
Yeah.
I seal envelopes. So, but then she found out as we got closer, like, oh, you're an actor.
Yeah, you're a working actor.
You make money.
Yeah.
Not a ton.
Right.
But enough.
Enough money to live.
And that's all I cared about.
In 25 years, you feel like it's been a pretty steady incline to where you are, or has it been peaks and valleys?
Peaks and valleys.
Yeah. How do you manage the valleys?
It's hard. I don't know if I'll ever get used to it. I there was a valley recent. I mean, the pandemic.
Oh, right.
It was rough, but I was lucky enough to have two jobs shooting during the pandemic.
That's great.
And that was great. And then after the pandemic, both of those shows went away. And then, apart from maybe a one day here, a one day there, everything was gone. And I said to my wife, I wonder if it isn't over.
Mm.
And she was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I was like, because, you know, this shit ends for
Fickle.
People like me. It just ends. Actors, they just stop and not because they want to.
Right.
And, you know, she's a great cheerleader, and she got me out of that hole. But
yeah.
And then soon, and she goes, you just got to manifest it, right?
Me and your wife, we'll get along great.
Yeah. And she's right.
Yeah.
She's taught me that lesson 1,000 times about a number of different things. And every time I do it, it works.
Yes.
Like, she's like, call your agent and just get on the ball with that. You be proactive. And I was like, you're right. And I did. Next thing you know, and this is not, I didn't just call my agent.
Right.
There was other things like to be proactive. The next thing you know, I'm like, right now, I don't have a second to myself.
Right.
And I can tell myself now that there will be points where I'm not going to be working in the future, but I don't feel that. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's so real. I've been having a lot of meetings lately, which is what you do. You take your generals, right?
Ugh.
So I know. I love people though, so I'm down. I'll talk to anybody.
I didn't understand generals until I kind of stopped having them.
Right. And they were like, what? Well, because I'm moving into a new, I wrote a screenplay, which is a new venue for me. I have written a lot of books, but not that. And so I just like need to learn the world a little bit.
Yeah, it's hard.
But I'm finding it fascinating to come in as an outsider and to come in as an outsider who isn't, I'm very like, whatever is meant for me will come to me. I don't chase anything. So I'm just sort of observing these personalities I'm meeting with. Mm-hmm. And the entertainment industry is just wild.
Wild.
But I meet with people, and you meet with people that, for lack of a better description, just like high vibration, like happy to be here, really interesting, really smart.
You are like, the most important person in the world.
No, I don't, not even that. Just like, oh, you're a vibe. And then I meet with people. I just had this the other day. I met with a producer who was everything's hard. Nobody's buying. And I'm thinking as she's speaking, I'm like, you are creating this reality.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yes.
If you go to Nashville and you talk to songwriters, I've happened to have talked to a lot of songwriters over the years, and they'll all tell you Nashville is a 10-year town. It's a 10-year town. It's a 10-year town. Everybody knows it. You're going to move here. It's going to take 10 years before anyone knows who you are. That's what they say.
Oh, wow.
And every time someone says it to me, I'm like, you're literally creating your timeline of 10 years. No, wow. Because they've all just accepted that truth. If I just put in a decade, then I'll have my shot. And wow. It's so fascinating to me that, of course, if you think nobody's buying, everybody's a jerk, nobody wants to work with your actor that you're representing, all these things, that's going to be real for you.
Yeah.
And if you, it sounds so cheesy, but if you believe the work is out there, I'm incredible, I'm going to meet other people who want to collaborate with me. It might not look like what I always think there's a path.
Yeah.
It just depends on which one you're headed down.
Damn. I that reminds me of, I mentor a lot of young actors. Just, I don't know how it even happens.
Yeah.
They just come to me. They email me and they'll ask for advice, and I'll give them specific advice depending on their situation. But I'll say, this is what struck me about 10 years. I'll say, you know what? Go out there, work, do it, nose to the grindstone, give it 5 years. Mm. If it doesn't work out, give it another 5 years. Now, if at the end of 10 years, you feel like it hasn't worked out, give it another 5 years and then another five.
Right.
You know, like basically saying like, you just have to be, whatever you do, you have to be in it to be in it, yes. Not for anything else. Like, I don't give a crap about any of the other shit that comes with it. I like doing it.
Yeah.
I like doing it.
Yeah.
And thank God. I mean, I found this thing that I can do, that they let me do.
Yeah. There's an incredible quote from Seth Godin where he asks, you know, that old line that says, what would you do if you knew you could not fail?
What could you do if you knew you could not fail?
Like, if you knew you wouldn't fail, what would you try? And people use it and they're like, well, I would write the book and I would do the podcast and I would do all of these things, right? But he asks the opposite. He says, what would you do if you knew you would fail? What do you love enough that even if you can't ever get to the goal you have in mind, it would be worth it? And I just think it's the most beautiful concept, especially for an artist.
Wow.
Of like, I have a friend who's a musician and I'm like, what? Would you be doing this even if you never have another hit, even if you never sell another concert ticket, if you never do any, is it worth it?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're making music for a living and you could be working at a bank. Like, that's my nightmare with anything with numbers in mind. Right. I'm like,
no offense to the
no
bankers
offense
out
to
there.
Anybody
banking,
who's a banker.
Wonderful profession.
Yeah, great.
But
we love having you as an advertiser. Yeah. But there's so many things you could be doing instead, but you pay your bills.
Yeah.
You're playing guitar in a bar. Like, that's how you pay your bills? Mm-hmm. What a freaking dream.
Damn.
So, what would you do if you knew you would fail?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have failed, you know?
Yeah.
And I found out early on, like before, you know, I was making $200, $300 because I was also teaching some Shakespeare workshops on a tour. It's for the National Shakespeare Company, which sounds a lot more important than it is.
Than it actually is.
It's nothing. we're in a 15-pass van and just driving around the country doing Shakespeare for junior colleges.
Wow.
It was wild. But I was making, like, at the end of the day, $300-something a week. And I realized one day, I was sitting on stage, because all of us were on stage at the same time, and I was playing a different character, and we were just background. We were setting, and my tour girlfriend at the time was, like, sitting there with me on stage, and we were both feeding each other grapes or some shit. I don't know. And I thought, and the lights were on us, and I was like, I've made it.
Yeah.
I've made it. This is all I need, you know? And that, and I sort of gradually realized, like, your expectations of success should be closely managed, because I still feel, and I still get that feeling, you know, like, I'm not looking for a end goal. There's not like, oh, well, I'm still not this.
Right.
You know, or I'm still not here. Every time, and it's random times. I wish I could give you another example besides eating mimed grapes.
No, I totally get it. But, and there's so many people, especially in this industry, who lose that almost immediately.
Yeah,
because they're chasing the success, because they're comparing themselves to someone
people
else.
People set you up to chase it.
Right.
You know, people set you up to chase it. And you hear so many stories about people who are dropped by everybody that told them that.
Yep.
And you know, it's just fear, you know? This is not a business where you can let fear drive you. And yet so many people do.
Yeah. It is such a good point, too, the idea that a lot of the people who are guiding will just as easily never answer your call again the second that it stops being hot. The second that you're not.
Yeah.
It's like you have to prove yourself in order to get anyone's attention. And then once their attention's on you, and you better keep producing or they're not returning your calls anymore.
It's the catch-22 that manifests itself throughout the business in different ways. Like, I couldn't get an agent without something to show, without a job, and I couldn't get a job without an agent, you know? And it's these impossible hurdles, seemingly impossible hurdles that are going to work themselves out.
Right.
They're going to be okay.
Right. Well, I equate this to books or even success as a podcaster, because people are always like, how do you get to the place where you have an advertiser? How do you get to the place where you have an agent or sell a book or do? And I'm like, you have to prove it. I know. But I need the team that's going to, and I'm like, the team is not interested in you unless you are showing what you are capable, even to this day. I find it a wild and beautiful experience to be starting over in a new, to try and screenwrite. Cause I'm like, I've sold 7 million books that lots of people listen to this podcast every month. That doesn't mean shit.
Is it scary though?
No, it feels good.
Oh, wow. That's great. It scares me.
the core, I like being a student. It's why I'm happy to sit in general meetings, because I'm like, I've learned something from every single person that I've spoken with. So to me, I'm just like,
was very surprised that these people we're talking about, the people that are in charge, supposedly, are very smart.
Yeah.
They're super smart people.
Yeah.
And they have the reputation, and some of them, you know, aren't, but they have the reputation of being these, you know, they're the, you know, Hollywood, they're just vacancy.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet they are very intelligent, and that's good. And that's, it's, I felt very comforted by that, because like I said, you know, I want smart people around me, because I don't consider myself that smart.
Someone's listening and they're new, they're like, they want to be an actor, they want any of the things. You said you mentor a lot of people. What is the advice you tell them when they're like, nobody knows who I am, nobody cares who I am, how the hell do I get to a place where I'm just sitting on a stage eating grapes
just with
my tour girlfriend?
Just act.
Anywhere.
All the time. There's so many opportunities for you now. There's so many more opportunities than there were for my generation. There's YouTube, and there's you know, you can do whatever. There's video streaming site, that anything. And there's also a lot of outlets. Like, you can, unless you're resisting something and they can stick, because they're going to see that.
Yeah.
Just do it. Yeah. Act all the time. I was so annoying when I was young. I was so annoying. Because I was just constantly doing bits, but I was working out my voice.
Right.
You know? And now that feel like I've worked it out, I'm boring, which is great. I don't have to do bits all the time.
Oh, man. Well, I appreciate that you didn't do bits during this conversation, because a lot of people try to.
I mean, I might have had one or two bits.
Yeah, no, right? They were all work.
Just saw it, but I let them go.
They felt fluid.
Get in, get out. Get in, get out.
Rob, thank you for hanging out.
That's it?
This is it, right? Didn't we talk for an hour? But, I mean, we'll go forever, we'll see. We have an extra room. You can move in. Yeah, it'll be great.
Yeah, that's what you want.
It's just you in a back house.
Some dude in your pool house, like, scratching his butt.
Oh, no, go look. You'll know him. You'll know him and love him. Yeah. No, this was a treat. Seriously.
Yeah, this was great. Because, you know, like I said, this is not the type of podcast I usually find myself doing, and I love doing it.
Yeah, and I hope we'll have you back.
Please.
This
is rad.
The Rachel Hollis Podcast is produced by me, Rachel Hollis. It's edited by Andrew Weller and Jack Noble.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.